Hey guys, and welcome to Kaisis, a podcast about living our new life in the new covenant age. Our podcast name comes from two Greek words, kaine ketesis, which mean new creation. I'm your co-host, Osvaldo Valdez, and let me welcome Pastor Todd Bordeaux.
Hey, Osvaldo, you ready to go on another episode?
Yes, part four. This is, you know, our longest series so far, and episode 21, so we're going strong.
Hey, I got to tell you before we begin, I did something today. I wanted to find out what you fundies were actually watching in the 90s, so I watched an episode of Bible Man.
You did? Wow, how was that?
My eyes and ears are bleeding.
Wow. Yeah. When I was 8 years old, that was the bomb, Pastor. That was it, you know? What's Star Wars, you know? What's Batman? Bible Man was where it's at, you know?
I mean, you got the dude from Charles in Charge fighting bad guys. He's fighting the fibbler.
There it is.
Oh my gosh. And then you've got these corny dance numbers with these kids and this music. Oh.
Hey, Pastor, it's all about winning the culture.
That was insane. You know, now it would be a great skit.
I'm thinking that's going to be my Halloween costume, you know?
I think you should be Bible Man for Halloween.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the things I do for this podcast.
Yeah. The sacrifice.
The sacrifices. All right. Well, let's continue common grace. We'll do a quick review that when we use the term common grace, we mean the world we share with unbelievers. It doesn't mean that the things of the world in common grace are pure or neutral, but what we use in common, what we have in common, whether government, we all share the same government, politics, athletics, education, work, art, marriage. We talked about marriage, the institution of marriage. Mm-hmm. We all share in it. We're told not to separate and start our own cultures, but to be part of this world. Jesus said, I did not take them out of this world. Now, often people say, yes, but Christians are to be salt and light, and therefore they are to make the common grace world more Christian. But often people separate salt and light from the gospel, and that's the big mistake. Jesus was speaking to his disciples, and when he told them they are the light of the world, he's not telling them that they are going to go make Roman society more Christian. Mm-hmm. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Mm-hmm. And yet he didn't make Israel as a nation any more Christian. Things actually got worse with him there.
Yeah.
And so being the light of the world is a saving light. It's the gospel. By Jesus saying, I am the light of the world, now you are the light. God's presence and mission is now with us. And therefore, God preserves the world as the church preaches the gospel. And so, yes, we do common good because as God loves people, we love people. We have God's love in us. But Joseph didn't make Egypt less pagan by helping out. He fed the Egyptians. He cared for people. But the light is our testimony of our relationship with Christ. The light is the gospel we preach and share in a dark world. And so to separate light and salt from the gospel and say that's all about culture, that would have been foreign. Can you imagine the disciples sitting there? Jesus saying, you are the light of the world. Hmm. And then saying, let's go out and change government. I mean, they obviously weren't thinking that. They had no power to do that. And so we talked about, we do use common grace with discretion. We don't cling to it because these gifts are temporary. So we are not to love the things of this world and live for them. And we remember that all things in this world with people involved will be tainted with sins. And so the Apostle Paul wrote, all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. And so we know ourselves, we use wisdom, and we learn when enough is enough, when something isn't edifying or helpful or profitable. But each person needs to decide that on their own. That's not for something that can be dictated from above, from a church, from other people, because each person is different. So we are to use common grace for the glory of God as we can, what affects our conscience in that area. So that's sort of the summary of where we've come to so far. Any thoughts on last week's episode or what leads us to this point?
You talked about in our last episode about Paul's dualism, and we kind of focus a little bit on marriage and the examples that he gave in 1 Corinthians. But I think I'd love to remind our listeners that Paul was always, you know, reminding the Corinthian church that although they live right in this age, they're called to live here and maybe die in this age, live a full life, encouraging to live quietly. He constantly has to remind them that their very hope and the very promise and what they look forward to is not this life or this age as an end in and of itself. They are called to look forward towards the consummation or the completeness of Christ's kingdom. So you talked about that Paul is addressing this dualism, this tension, and in one way they live in this age, but in another way they've already experienced the new age, the kingdom of Christ through the gospel, by their hearts being renewed and then receiving the Spirit. So I thought that was really helpful to look at, kind of look at common grace through that lens, that we're living in this time of tension. You know, in one way we live in this age, but in another way we've already experienced the beginnings, you know, of the coming of Christ kingdom.
Yeah, so it's not as much what we can do and can't do, but is the perspective on these things of why we do it and what our hope is in and things like that. Kind of what you said of yeah. being the new creation in the midst of old creation. We see everything differently, don't we?
Exactly.
So where I want to go tonight is in the scriptures, there are two ways to respond to common grace. And the first way is thankfulness. And I'll be reading from Ecclesiastes 5, 18 through 20. This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, drink, and find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth or possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and to be happy in their toil, for this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. And so that last verse is actually a positive in the sense that we all are born to die. Yeah. We don't know when that day will be. And we don't want to, God does not want us to live in this morbid sense of despondency over that. And he gives us gifts, and he gives us common grace to simply enjoy life, to ease the pain of the curse. It simply makes life more bearable. Isn't that what music does? Good music, good art, sports, they make life bearable and enjoyable. So we're not focused so much on the morbid reality of death. And so anything we have, any gift we have, we are to be thankful for because it's better than hell. And hell is what we actually all deserve. And so simple things like taking walks outside, watching sports, watching a movie, listening to music, going on vacation and enjoying a theme park, whatever gifts God has given to make life a little easier, we are to be thankful for. We don't have to feel guilty about enjoying life. We're actually told in Ecclesiastes, enjoy life. God has given us these things to get us through. And so we often don't think of it in terms of God keeping our minds occupied so we can experience some happiness in this life. But Any thoughts on approaching common grace this way?
Last week, we talked a little bit about being careful not to be Gnostics, in the sense that prioritizing the spirit over the body, or thinking that spiritual things are better than bodily things. And I say that carefully because, I mean, God cares. What we talked about yesterday, and last week, was that God cares about both things, right? God cares about not only the renewal of our hearts, but also about, you know, how we live life. And it's interesting because common grace is an interesting expression of how God actually cares, you know, about life and enjoying life so much that he actually allows non-Christians, people who are not even his people, to enjoy things like all that you mentioned, sports, movies, vacation, music. And we see here how God cares and loves his creation in such a way that he gives us these opportunities to enjoy life outside of quote unquote spiritual things, you know, because sometimes we think that spiritual things are, and I say this carefully, that spiritual things are somehow the ideal, and we become very Gnostic in the sense that we have to detach from life experiences and from all that is physical. But that's simply not the way the New Testament sees things. I'm not saying that these life experiences are an end in of itself or they bring salvation. On the contrary, I think rather they demonstrate that God actually cares about life and the experiences that we have in life in such a way that we can enjoy them. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right that it shows us that God cares not only about the spiritual part of the soul, but the emotional and psychological, every part of the soul and body. And he's given us all these gifts to enjoy. You know, I've told you before, my wife and I go to the YMCA every morning. And we're so thankful that we have this beautiful facility with gyms and Olympic-sized swimming pools and basketball courts. And here we share it with unbelievers. Mm-hmm. And we're told in the Bible that unbelievers deep down hate Christians. And yet God has put such a restraint on the world that we can share these things together.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful, we're just so thankful for such a simple but wonderful gift in common grace that we have all the time. But the point I want to make, and I know we have a few listeners from other countries, but most of them are American Christians. American Christians have a hard time being thankful for common grace. Mm. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Yes, and I'll comment a little bit more later.
Okay. You know, one of the reasons we have this myth that America is a special land and blessed of God, so we expect so much better. And so we're constantly complaining that the way things are, because if only we would have done this, and if only the church would do this, things would be better. Instead of being really thankful for what we do have. And there's a great irony in this, because your average American Christian gets up in the morning in a house or an apartment built by mostly unbelievers, eats food fit for kings. What I mean by that is, in the ancient world, the only people that had a meal and ate three or four different things were kings. Mm. You know, you had a meat, you had a side, you had a salad, you had a dessert. The way we eat are not, historically, are the way kings ate in the classical world and in the ancient world. So we get up and we eat food that was farmed and transported and cleaned by mostly unbelievers. We enjoy air conditioning created by mostly unbelievers. We get into these contraptions called automobiles, which take us wherever we want to go with little effort, invented by a man named Henry Ford, who is not a believer, on roads built by unbelievers. We see our doctor, mostly an unbeliever, who uses medicine created mostly by unbelievers to help us. Then we stop at a Starbucks and have our triple lattes. We come home, watch our television created mostly by unbelievers. Then we get on the internet created by unbelievers. And what do we do on the internet? We complain about how non-Christians are ruining America.
Wow.
That's the irony of American Christians. Hmm. And so while Ecclesiastes will show us that there is a dark side to common grace in this fallen world, we are to be thankful for anything we have because we don't deserve it. And God is placing a great restraint on the world, and he's also giving the world wonderful things every day just to keep us sane and going and healthy. And so the constant spirit of criticism, of complaining about the world, is sometimes showing a real spiritual sickness. The wanting everything better now instead of being thankful for what we have is dangerous. Now, there's another side to this we'll get to in a moment, but in Ecclesiastes, it's very clear what the word says over and over. Life is hard, and then we die. And so relax, have some fun, enjoy the toil of your labor, go do fun things, listen to music, go out to eat or whatever. Be thankful, because we don't deserve it. And a thankful heart is a Christian heart. So I start off by asking you if you believe American Christians struggle. What are your thoughts then?
It's so funny. It reminded me of a conversation that I had with a friend that dominion theology or theonomy, it's easier to accept if you're from the West, where you live in prosperity, eat like kings, and pretty much live like live in pure prosperity. It's easier to criticize about the state of the world, the state of how non-Christians, like you said, are ruining America. It's easier to do all those things from a standpoint of abundance and prosperity. It's really easy because like you're not really struggling, you know, like half the world that struggle for meals and for food. I have two parents that both of my parents come from, you know, very deep poverty in their own home countries, and they became Christians in their own countries. And it's interesting how their perspective on common grace, it's not a negative one, you know. They see it as, like you said, as God's gift. When you're struggling to put food on the table or to even eat at all, it's easier, you know, to thank to not look down on the non-Christian baker, you know, who you get really cheap bread from or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just sometimes our own prosperity and abundance, we're so high up in the skies, you know, in an economic sense and in our lifestyle that we are blinded by that, you know? We always talk about church history and how very early on in church history, it's very interesting how they understood society. They never saw society in the way that we do it. You don't hear the harsh criticisms, you know, that American Christians have against non-Christians here. It's a more quiet lifestyle. How do I say this? They're more sober and aware of God's good things, even through non-Christians. But once again, my comment is more like, yeah, it's really easy to criticize and have a critical spirit when you have everything at hand.
Yeah, and I remember when I was with my wife in Mexico, I forget where we were. Anyway, one of the small towns, and they're very. I don't. There may have been one Protestant church in the whole town, but in the center of town was a community center where people were playing basketball and tennis and. There were dance lessons going on.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about how corrupt Mexico is or, you know, the cartels. And, of course, all that is true. But here in the midst of all that were people just enjoying life.
Mm-hmm.
And here we were as Christians, you know, with them and just so thankful for common grace all around the world. And you know, Christians generally should enjoy and be happy when it comes to just the benefits we have.
Yeah, and it's funny, Pastor, because one of the fondest memories I've had every time of all the times I've gone to Mexico, it all have to do with that community center because that's actually very common. Even my dad's from south of Mexico, and even in the small community that he's from, they have a community center. And like you said, dance lessons, sometimes plays from the students, small younger kids. Soccer, basketball, and one of the fondest memories I have, they have been in that place.
That's pretty neat. Well, let's look at the other side of this, because there's another side in Scripture, and especially in Ecclesiastes, and that is vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Because when we look at common grace, one of the problems is people are involved, and people have a habit of ruining things. And if people don't ruin them, our own decaying body, sickness, and death will ruin it all. And so there's a lament about common grace. There's another side of it. For example, we're thankful for movies, television, but then Hollywood goes too far. And then we have to turn off our televisions. Or we're very excited about sports, but then we get our children involved in sports and we find out there's a lot of politics and ripping people off financially and the ugly side of things. Politics. You know, we're thankful that there is government and politics, that we're not living in anarchy. At the same time, politics is ugly. People with power abuse, and including our American government, past and present, people die. And so there's the ugly side of common grace. Marriage is a beautiful institution, but it often moves to abuse and then divorce. Local schools can be wonderful teaching our children, but then they can be dangerous, or they change or run poorly or whatever. And so when you love common grace too much, you learn that there's a vanity about it. There's a regret, a disappointment in this life. It never quite meets your needs. It never quite works as well as it should, because everything is tainted. Everything's fallen. There's a mourning about that. Now, and you'll see this the more you pastor, is some Christians are more attuned to the positive aspect of common grace. They're very thankful, they're excited, they're very involved in the arts and music and culture. Other Christians are more attuned to the vanity of common grace. Maybe they've had really bad experiences in these things, or bad experiences in life where music takes on a dark character. It's interesting, some of the greatest artists and musicians, they come from a very dark place, and they understand the vanity of the world, and that's what makes their music and art somewhat excellent and unique. And so when you meet people, it really depends on their life experiences and circumstances, and even their personality, that they will have, they will be either really excited about the common grace gifts or somewhat sad or cynical about them. And so we're still supposed to be thankful. It's not an excuse not to be thankful. We are to recognize the other side of all this, too, in a fallen world. So can you think of examples of each, maybe with people or circumstances?
Let me tell you. So 2019, October, okay? So before I tell that story, let me give you some background. So for those of the audience that don't know, I'm a huge soccer fan, you know? And that love for soccer started in 2010 and the World Cup. And there's a soccer player who's always been my hero. His name is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and he's a Swedish player. And 2010, at that time, he was in AC Milan in Italy. So there was no way I can actually go or watch a game. So I only watch him on TV and, you know, play his team on a video game and stuff like that. But he's always been a hero. I'd always watch his videos, you know, his interviews. Huge, huge, huge fan. So you can imagine my excitement when he moved from Italy. I'm sorry, he moved from France at that time. He moved from France to LA Galaxy and here in Los Angeles in the United States. And in God's good grace, that team was able to come and play in Houston. So I had the opportunity to go and watch him. So after like 10 years of being a huge fan of him, I had the opportunity to go and watch him. So me and Abraham, my brother, we bought some like great tickets, super close. I was able to to see him like 20 feet away. And I was, you know, screaming my heart out, you know, I love you, Zlatan. I was so excited. However, once the game started, I saw how this person really is. He started, completely like harassing his own teammates. He's actually a huge jerk. He'd push them. He'd cuss them out in front of everyone, humiliate them in front of the crowd, his own teammates. It was like seeing my hero die before me. And after that game, I came away from that game extremely disappointed. I was a huge fan. You know, I try to, like, it's so funny. Abraham can tell you, like, for me, I try to imitate his game style. Whenever I play soccer, I was trying to be like Zlatan, play like him. But seeing him in person, you know, I saw a completely different side. I saw a man who has anger issues. I saw a man who can't even get along with his own fellow players, that humiliates him in front of people and can't even work as a team. And he ended up being like a huge jerk. And you can imagine, even at 20 years old, I felt completely devastated to see such a hero. So that's one side of common grace that's kind of sobering when you realize, well, no matter how beautiful the game is, no matter how great the player is, you know, if they're not Christian at the end of the day, you know, they're corrupt and subject to vanity.
Yeah, there's an old saying, never meet your heroes.
Yeah, and I learned that the hard way, Pastor. It cost me $80 to learn that.
I remember when I first came to Cornerstone like 3 years ago, you came on a Sunday morning and the World Cup was going on. Do you remember that?
Oh, Pastor, it was the final. And I was like, I have to go to church.
That shows his commitment, everybody. But you look like you were in pain.
Oh, Pastor, let me tell you. You'd be surprised. We were part of a Hispanic church, and whenever Mexico played in the World Cup and it happened to fall on a Sunday, church was empty, Pastor. A church of 200 people, only 30 people showed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I want to close with a thought, and that is that kind of what you just said about the sadness and disappointment and mourning, that this world never quite lives up to what we want. There's always a longing, always a melancholy or sadness over time of the things we were excited about is really a longing for heaven. You know, you ever hear a sermon where you're told you need to long for heaven, and you always feel a little guilty because, you know, you don't spend a lot of time in your day thinking about heaven.
Yeah.
And when you're younger, especially, there's a lot of things to look forward to here that you're thinking about. But the reality is we're always longing for heaven. The Bible actually tells us we do long for heaven. And I want to read a quote from C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, which really sums it up well. Most of us find it very difficult to want heaven at all. One reason for this difficulty is that we have not been trained. Our whole education tends to fix our minds on this world. But another reason is that when real want for heaven is present in us, we do not recognize it. Most people, if they had really learned to look into their own hearts, would know that they do want, and want acutely, something that cannot be had in this world. There are all sorts of things in this world that offer to give it to you, but they never quite keep their promise. Isn't that a great quote?
Yeah.
And so he's saying, we're always longing for heaven as Christians. We're always longing for things to be better, perfect. We're not finding it in this world. And it's interesting, in 1 Peter, Peter doesn't command us to think about heaven. He tells us we already are as Christians. 1 Peter 1:4, this inheritance is kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In all this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. So he says, you're already rejoicing in heaven as you look ahead to the time you won't be going through these trials. He doesn't say, stop thinking of earth, only think of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you actually are always thinking of heaven. And so we are to, as Lewis says, recognize these wants in us is because we were made ultimately for a better place.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. All right, so we have one more episode on common grace. Next week, we're not going to look at Bible man. We're going to look at the common grace thief in every church.
Pastor, if we're not talking about Bible man, I don't think I'll show up.
I know. We may do a nostalgia episode on Bible man. No. So there is a common grace thief in every church who does a lot of damage and really is in great danger when it comes to a proper understanding of who we belong to. So what does a common grace thief do? And hopefully you, not speaking of you, Osvaldo, but you, listener, you're not one of them. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. I hope this episode on Common Grace has been helpful. And Osvaldo, thanks for your help.
Absolutely. I love doing this. Give me my freedom.